Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I've been getting a lot of new subscribers and participants on my channel recently, and so if you're new here or have just recently come on board, welcome. I'm very glad that you're here and looking at some of my content and what I've had to say about Scientology, critical thinking, my Sensibly Speaking podcast, and other things that I've put up. I've been having a good time doing this channel for the last 3 years, and as we roll into upcoming 2017, there are more big projects and good things coming, and I think you guys are going to enjoy what I'm going to be putting out. So anyway, welcome, and I've got, you know, of course, a lot of Q&A shows in the past that I've done, and you can find the questions that have been asked of me on my blog, mncriticalthinking.com, which is also linked below in the notes to this video. And I do my best to not repeat myself, but of course, sometimes that happens and that sort of thing. It has been an exciting end of year for me, because now I have finally been attacked publicly, overtly, by the Church of Scientology because I went on Leah Remini's show. It was pretty obvious from the page that they created, which is on Leah's, it's on the Church of Scientology's attack site against Leah's show. It's not a whoischrisshelton.com site where I have my own dedicated website. I still don't rate that. But they did a page on me on her show. It's LeahRemini.aftermath.com. And I'm not going to address all of the accusations that they make against me or anything like that because it's a mixture of half-truths, exaggerations, and oddly, just outright lies, which are very easily disproven. I was very interested in to see how they do that, and it was interesting, you know, having direct knowledge of my life and how I've lived it, and seeing how they twisted and perverted things to make it look, you know, the worst possible light. It was pretty interesting, but I'm not concerned about it. It's not something I'm losing sleep over, and in fact, when you go into the life that I've gone into, where I am a public advocate against, you know, Scientology, the Church of Scientology, this is expected. I mean, I've been prepped for something like this since the day I started. My family, my friends, I mean, everybody knows, the people that I work with, that this is what I do as part of my life. And so so they know how the church works, and they know the tactics of the church, and they know to expect this. So so this hasn't hurt me personally or anything like that. It's not going to. But I thought I should at least, you know, get in front of it. And so I tweeted about it and I put it up on Facebook and stuff and said, hey, you know, this happened. Just like Leah and Mike said it would on the show, which, you know, again, you'd think Scientology would learn. You'd think they would, like, get ahead of themselves a little bit. You know, Leah and Mike have me on their show and they say, hey, you know, as our parting gift to you, you're going to get a website, right, about from the Church of Scientology because you showed up on Leah's show. And the next day, they put up a page about me, and it was a total hate page, you know, just slamming me. And they had a four-minute video from my ex-wife, who, as far as I know, is still in the C organization, you know, talking for a bit about, you know, how what a horrible, awful person I am, which And I understand why she's doing that. I don't take anything she said personally. It doesn't bother me at all. And I know why she did that. And I know that also that, you know, because of actions I took, as I laid out in my book on Scientology, I've said that I, you know, I was not entirely faithful with her. And in the end, right, it wasn't until the end of our marriage that it really went, you know, really bad. And I don't have any question as to why she would have ill will toward me, right? I don't feel that toward her. And to this day, I still don't. So I thought I would just throw some comments out there about this. It was a lot of fun, by the way, being on Leah's show. They flew me out there. It wasn't a paid gig. I didn't get any any recompense for doing it. They paid my expenses to fly me out there. I talked. And then they flew me home. That's basically how these things go. You know, You're not making money talking against Scientology, I can tell you that. But I did have a great time meeting her. You know, we had interacted online before that, and she had been kind enough to reach out to me and let me know that she had liked my work. And I thought that was awesome, you know, and learning that the production team had actually been watching my videos, that was awesome to learn. And just having a great time on the show, meeting the producers, meeting, you know, the crew and whatnot. Of course, I've met Mike Rinder before. He and I are friends. So the experience itself was wonderful. And I think they used maybe about a quarter of what I actually said, which is fine. They have tight editing and all that. And I think I hope I came across well. I think I did. And I'm very happy to have been on that, you know. And once I, you know, went on there, I started getting a lot more attention, you know, here on this show and on this channel. And once I tweeted out that I'd been attacked by Scientology publicly, oh my God, I had so many wonderful, I mean, really wonderful messages and, you know, communications of support and understanding and people telling me not to let it get to me and that sort of thing. And I will admit that, you know, for the first 48 hours, it did throw me, right? I mean, I'm fine now, but when it first came out, it does throw you to see yourself attacked that way, especially with a video of my ex-wife. I mean, that did surprise me. I didn't see that coming. And all that support that I got from you folks really made a difference, okay? And I want you to know that. You know, your good wishes and support to me, it matters. It really does count. And so thank you. Thank you very much for all of that. So, I think I've hit everything I wanted to hit on talking about that. We've got a lot of questions to take up this week, and I hope you'll enjoy my answers. So, here we go. Jill Keb. It seems people are able to get out of Scientology or the C organization with nothing and rebuild. I'd like to hear more about that. What line of work did you get into? Is there a list of people who would help support defectors? For a lot of people, especially those who were in the Sea Org for years, who were in a tight, cloistered situation where their whole lives were nothing but Scientology, coming out of that situation can be very daunting and difficult because you do pretty much start with nothing. They give you, when you leave the Sea Organization, they give you $500. At least that's what they gave me as severance pay after, you know, 17 years of abuse. And you are back at square zero. You know, they take some measure of responsibility when you leave to make sure that you land somewhere, you have some place to go. They don't just hand you your bag and your papers and say, you know, hit the road, Jack. They try to, you know, do something so that you won't just, you know, end up back on their doorstep or something like that. I ended up, you know, landing at my mother's house in Sacramento and you know, got my feet on the ground that way, right? Different people have different things that happen to them, right? Not everybody has been as lucky as I have been in having as much support that I had, right? Or having job skills. You know, they train you to do things when you're in Scientology and the Sea Org because you're working for that organization, and they have all manner of things that you do when you work there, whether you're a cook or whether you're doing physical labor, like building furniture or an engineering work or something like that. Or you're doing, you know, personal interaction work, whether you're a Scientology counselor or a course supervisor, like a teacher, or whether you're an executive or something like that. Now, a lot of those skills don't translate so well when you come out, though. It's not like if you're an executive in the C organization that you're an MBA, you know, when you come out. It doesn't work that way, right? And I had a real hard time trying to find work initially using Scientology as my reference and on my resume. That didn't get anywhere. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with me because of that. But what I did was I trained myself very quickly on Photoshop, After Effects, you know, graphic design, principles of graphic design. All of that for me is all self-taught, and I'm no master of of all of that, but I'm competent at it, right? And it's something I had an interest in when I was in the Sea Org, and I did copywriting and I did promotional materials and I did recruitment for the Sea Org. So I learned how to use InDesign and Photoshop and things like that. And I learned more about that sort of thing after I got out and then starting my YouTube channel. So my attitude has always been a sort of just roll with it and learn as you go. And, you know, maybe one positive aspect of the Sea Org attitude of make it go right. And, you know, the supreme test of a person is his ability to make things go right. You know, one thing that toughens you up a bit. And so when you come out of that situation, you are, you know, you have a strong work ethic because you've been working your ass off for however long you've been involved with the Sea Org. And you are not afraid of work particularly. And you have a very kind of gung-ho attitude about learning things. At least, you know, most people that I knew were like that. Not everybody, but a lot. So that's how I got myself, you know, my feet on the ground and stuff, is I had the help of my family and friends and that sort of thing that I made as I came out. And some people have that and some people don't. As far as a support system for defectors, the reason that we don't really talk about this a lot, we being Scientology critics or advocates against Scientology, is because if I were to tell you who offers support for people who come out of Scientology, the Church of Scientology would go ruin those people. So the last thing I can really do is talk about what kind of support system there is for people who come out of Scientology. They, you know, when you come out of the Sea organization or you come out of Scientology, when you make yourself publicly known as somebody who has done that, people will reach out to you, and there is support and there is advice and there is direction, and I do know people who have given of their time and their effort and their money to help support people who are landing and getting on their feet. I had some of that help myself when I did eventually end up here in Denver. So those people exist, but it's not like they're, you know, they run a website or they have some sort of base of operations or something, or it's, you know, anybody who shows up will get money or something. It doesn't work that way. You have to, you know, make friends and show that you're, you know, obviously somebody who can be trusted, because there have been times when, you know, people have taken advantage of other people. You know, people who come out of the Scientology and come out of the Sea Org are human beings, and there's good ones and there's bad ones. So there's all kinds of stories connected with this, but that sort of thing is always, it's not really talked about publicly much because we don't want the Office of Special Affairs or the Church of Scientology to get their mitts involved in this. And believe me, they do. They really make efforts to try to find people who are helpful to those who leave, and they try to ruin them, right? So I'm not going to help them out by giving any names or any specific stories or something like that, because that really would not be very constructive. So all I can really say is that there are support systems, there are people who are willing to help, and you know, myself included. I have not financially, but I have helped people who have come out with advice and direction and things like that. And of course, I've talked on my channel at ad nauseum about recovering from Scientology. So those things exist, and I hope I'm making myself clear as to why I'm only talking about it in general terms. There you go. Courtney Gordon, your interview on Oh No, Ross and Carrie was fantastic. Could you expand on the prison planet, Alex Jones, Scientology connection? Yeah, thanks, Courtney. It was a lot of fun. Ross and Carrie are great. And as far as this connection goes, this is actually pretty simple. Alex Jones is not a closet Scientologist or somebody who's allied with Scientology or anything like that. In fact, I just watched a video where he sort of has a bit of a neutral attitude towards Scientology. He likes them, but he doesn't like them, you know, for some of the things they do. He likes the fact that they're not for big pharma, that they're anti-psychiatry and that sort of thing, because that fits in with his conspiracy-minded New World Order agenda. But he doesn't like, of course, that they, you know, are involved in child abuse and child labor and that sort of thing, right? That has been exposed and going clear. And he's read Tony Ortega's blog, going all the way back to the Village Voice. And he, you know, knows that Scientology's been up to no good. So he's not, you know, an ally of Scientology. But the funny connection is that Alex Jones has a website called prisonplanet.com. Now, that is a conspiracy website run by him that has no connection to Scientology. And yet, when I was in Scientology, Scientologists, and especially the Sea Org, love that conspiracy stuff. I mean, love it. Because L. Ron Hubbard was a conspiracy buff. He preached conspiracy theory. He preached that there were 12 bankers who ran the world through the IMF and that they used psychiatry as their enforcement arm. I mean, he just flat out, very blatant about this. And you can find articles and things where he's talked about this. So Hubbard refers to Earth as a prison planet. And within the Sea Organization, this is a term that's used. We're living on a prison planet. And they mean that literally. Because I've talked in the past about how spiritual beings called Thetans in Scientology, you're a Thetan, I'm a Thetan. Well, when we die, we get trapped and shoved back into another body here on this planet. And we're stuck in an endless cycle of life after life after life. And we can't escape. You can't just go, oh, well, I don't want to be here anymore, and just go away. According to Hubbard, this is all Scientology. There are force fields and screens and traps and things that will entrap you as a Thetan and keep you here. And so Earth has been presented to Scientologists as a prison planet. So it was, you know, so Scientologists and Sea Org members easily align themselves with Alex Jones and his way of thinking and all of his New World Order conspiracy nonsense, right? And it is nonsense. Alex Jones is a lying, horrible, awful person. I have nothing good to say about Alex Jones. But I used to follow Alex Jones when I was in the Sea Org. And I used his materials. We even used his DVDs and his conspiracy stuff to recruit people into the Sea Org, because back then I bought into all of that, and as do other Sea Org members and Scientologists. So that's the connection that's there. And I'm actually going to be doing a podcast on Monday where I will be talking about this at even greater length with a podcaster who talks about conspiracy theory and Alex Jones and stuff like that, because he asked me a question about this too and wanted me to be on his podcast about it. So we'll talk about this in even more detail. I've only got a couple minutes where I can address this, so that's all I can tell you here. But there will be more detail there. And so watch for that podcast. I'll link it and tweet it out and that sort of thing. Mike Maddox. My question has to do with levels of belief at the top. And in this case, I mean exactly David Miscavige and his weird psychology. What spurred me to wonder about this is the existence of CST projects. It seems to me that a cynical overlord who doesn't believe in the teachings of the cult he leads wouldn't spend money on this activity. That is, the preservation of Hubbard's words, the holy scripture of Scientology, so that they may be available to future generations and perhaps even survive nuclear explosions. It gives him nothing because it's secret. This stuff is completely different from the endless opening of new ideal orgs and expensive media facilities, which are clearly done as PR, presumably aimed at current Scientologists. That stuff is all public, and it might actually make sense to spend money on such stuff for the sake of keeping people in the fold and willing to donate more money. But the CST centers are secret. What would a cynical non-believer want with that? It would seem to be almost literally money down a rabbit hole. For example, if you watch any of these exposés of money-grubbing televangelists, all of their money is spent on their own luxurious lifestyles. You don't see them, for example, secretly building a mansion for Jesus to hang out in when he ultimately returns. That wouldn't make sense for a cynical, non-believing overlord. So my question really comes down to, what is going on with Miscavige and these nutty secret projects that only spend money, produce no publicity, and produce no more fancy motorcycles for Davy? Okay, actually, this is way simple, and it has to do with tax exemption. The CST that you refer to is the Church of Spiritual Technology, and it is one of the three foundation corporations upon which the Church of Scientology is built. CST, or the Church of Spiritual Technology's purpose is to bring in money and build facilities that are in remote locations to house archival material of Hubbard's works on metal titanium plates. They've etched his words, all the things that he wrote, And on nickel-plated records, they have etched all of his recordings, his recorded lectures. And they put these things into underground facilities that they have dug into the, you know, into the ground in Wyoming, in New Mexico, in a couple places in California, where they have what's called the Preservation of the Tech projects. And the tech refers to Scientology technology, or L. Ron Hubbard's works. This was something Hubbard wanted because he wanted there to be Scientology forever. He wanted to, L. Ron Hubbard, very early on in his life, decided that he wanted to live forever by being a writer and by having his works carry on into eternity. That is how you gain immortality in a certain sense. And he wanted to smash his name into history. So, that's his expression. So, this project was set up in the 1980s, and money started going to it, and Scientologists donate money to this project in order to keep it going. And I'm talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars. CST has a huge budget, and they use it. But the reason that they have a huge budget and the reason that they use it is because in 1993, when the IRS said, where is your money going? Why are we going to, if we give you tax exemption, this was before it was approved, if we give you tax exemption, what are you going to do with this money? And this was one of the things that the Church of Scientology told the IRS they were going to do with it. They had a whole series of projects that they were going to do with CST, and this Preservation of the Tech project was one of them. So the Church of Scientology is obligated to spend money in this direction, right, to get money to CST and have it used for this purpose, because if the IRS comes a-calling, they're going to expect to see a great deal of Scientology's money going to these projects. And if it's not, then the IRS is going to revoke Scientology's tax-exempt status. That period. End of story. It's really, that's the answer to your question. Now, there is, while these projects are hidden and kept secret from Scientologists, I mean, you can find all of them on the internet, and I learned about all of this after I left Scientology. None of this is really super secret. As far as the world is concerned, if you Google it, you'll find out all about this. Scientologists are kept in the dark about it because it creates a mystery and mystique and an aura of, ooh, we're doing something nobody else knows about. Because Scientologists think that if they don't know about it, then the rest of the world doesn't know about it either. And they're fools for this, but this is what they think, right? Because they don't look on the internet at this stuff. Or if they do, they can't admit that they do, so they have to go along with the sham that it's all super secret. But a lot of money from Scientologists is put, the CST pushes Scientologists to donate money to this thing and keep it going. So the tax exemption is the answer to the question. Fundraising for it is another answer to the question, because they do tell Scientologists that this project is ongoing, that it needs money, and that Scientologists need to donate to it. Now, whether all of the money that is donated to it is used for just that purpose, I couldn't say. CST is a super, super secret organization. It is very hard to find any hard facts about it as an organization, as a corporation, and find out what it's doing with the money. It's not, there's no transparency. The IRS could go in and find out, but you and I can't necessarily. Not so easily. And there have really only been one or two people in all the years of people coming out of Scientology. There have only been a couple people who had intimate, detailed knowledge of what goes on at CST facilities. And, you know, kudos to them for speaking out about it. And Tony Ortega has written a couple articles about this, so you can find more details there. But it's, and it is fascinating, but it's not just, it's not, it would be an incorrect conclusion to think that David Miscavige believes in Scientology because he funds these projects. That's not an accurate conclusion. He funds the projects because he has to, because they told the IRS that they would. So that's the explanation behind that. Justine Salisbury, what are the KRC and ARC triangles, and what are the differences between the two? It's an interesting question. I think I've talked about this before, but I couldn't find it. So I'm going to talk about it again and just give a quick overview of this. I think I talked about it kind of too long the last time I discussed this, so we'll just be real short and to the point. There are two triangles. These are philosophical ideas in Scientology. One of them is the ARC triangle, which is affinity, reality, and communication. And those three component parts of this triangle are supposed to equal understanding. In other words, how much you understand something depends on how much affinity you have for it, how much reality you have of it, and how much you communicate or can communicate with it, whether it's another person, a subject, anything. The KRC triangle is knowledge, responsibility, and control, and it works the same way. The knowledge, responsibility, and control is something that Hubbard emphasizes in his policies as something very important for Scientology administrators and executives, more so than for life, you know, and living life. The ARC triangle, and it's not called the ARC triangle, it's called the ARC triangle, is used in Scientology often. Everybody in Scientology learns about the ARC triangle very early on. It's a very basic principle. And the idea is you can have a quantity of ARC, right? You can have varying quantities of this. So a lot of ARC, if you have a lot of ARC for something, you really understand it, you really like it, you really feel close to it. Whereas if you don't have a lot of ARC for something, or if there is an ARC break, right, there has been some kind of a symbolic break in affinity, reality, and communication, then you don't want to be close to it, you don't want to like it, you don't want to have much to do with it, you don't know much about it, right? And this is a relative thing. Your ARC can go up and go down as you learn about things, as you interact with things. And so this is, it's an interesting concept, and there is some workability to it in that there are instances where you can use this information in such a way as to improve your relationships or communication or affinity or, you know, relative degree of liking or whatever with other people and other things, right? In other words, let's say you and another person find something in common that you both have, right? This is just standard human relationships 101, right? You find something that you have in common, you're able to communicate about that thing, and you like each other more as a result. Well, in Scientology, that would be interpreted as finding some common reality, they are part of the triangle, communicating about that common reality, and therefore your affinity for each other goes up, right? That's how this works. And so, like I said, the result of this is supposed to be more understanding for the thing that you have more ARC for. And there are instances where this works, and there's instances where it doesn't work. I'll talk about it in a future video series that I'll be doing next year in much greater detail. But for now, that's basically how those two things work. Stephen Willis. Around cult leaders, or even just regular celebrities, there's often collections of items the person made, used, or even just touched, which become extremely valuable to followers. Are there any L. Ron Hubbard relics being traded around by or shown to the Scientology community? Not so much. There's an L. Ron Hubbard life exhibition in Los Angeles on the first floor of the Hollywood Guarantee Building on Hollywood Boulevard, which has a lot of memorabilia of Hubbard's, right? Or at least copies of memorabilia of his stuff. But a lot of his stuff has been collected up over the years and resides in an archive place at the Gold Base in Hemet or San Jacinto, California. And that's where they've amassed most of Hubbard's works. They've also been spending years over time since the 80s going around collecting L. Ron Hubbard originals, is what they call them, right? Any document, any book, any that he autographed, any paper that he signed, anything he ever had anything to do with, they will go and get those things by whatever means necessary. And I've heard a story, for example, of a person in California who had quite a collection he had amassed of Hubbard originals and signed books and original works of Hubbard. And the Religious Technology Center just went in one day, knocked on his door, and demanded that he give all of it over to them, just will-nil, just give it to us now. And they went in and took his stuff, right? And this is the story that I heard. So they're not above being heavy-handed about collecting this stuff. For what purpose? I really have no idea. I don't know why it became super, super important to the church to do this, because they don't, you know, put all this stuff out for everybody to see. So I'm not really sure what that, you know, what the thing was about collecting all those Hubbard originals. But it was a big deal, and it was a worldwide project in the 80s. They sent Sea Org missions out to St. Hill Manor, for example, in England. And they went and scoured through the St. Hill Manor and the stable. They found a bunch of stuff up in the attic of the stable of Hubbard's, and they were like, "Oh, treasure trove!" I remember hearing a story about that back, you know, years ago. So these things are not like the cross of, you know, the splinter of the cross of Jesus, where people can, Scientologists can, "Oh, I can touch it." You know, doesn't quite work that way within the world of Scientology. But the church is fairly obsessed on getting hold of Hubbard's stuff. It's time for Flash Answers. Fat Oneful. Lance Bass said Leah Remini was once his sponsor. Does this mean she would have gotten money if he stuck with it, or was this just a nice thing for her to do? Yeah, Lance Bass talked recently on a talk show about how Leah Remini had gotten him into Scientology for some marriage counseling with a partner that he had, that he was having trouble with, and that the marriage counseling was helpful to him, and that then Scientology had, you know, tried to, you know, get him to become a member, and he was like, "Oh, no, I don't think so," and ended up leaving. And Leah Remini, being his sponsor, and that's the word they use in Scientology, is his FSM, his field staff member. A person, you know, anybody can be a field staff member. It's a person who's appointed to bring people in, to disseminate Scientology, talk it up, promote it, and bring people in. And when you do that, you usually get a commission. And yes, Leah Remini would have continued to get commissions on services he paid for. Not that she needs the money, but that's what would have happened, because that's how Scientology works, it works on a commission system. Mariana Barba. Were you the course supervisor at PAC? I left in 2000-something. Thank you for your videos. It's a long story. I was in Ash O'Day. Hey, Mariana. I think I might remember you. I was not a course supervisor at the Pacific Base at PAC, which is the big blue buildings. I was an executive over all of the courses and auditing delivery for the Western United States, and that included in the PAC base in the big blue buildings for all the Sea Org organizations there. I was in charge of making sure that all that delivery of Scientology was being done correctly and being done in volume. And I did that for 8 years before I, 8 or 9 years, I think, before I burned out on that and got into doing other work for the Sea Org. So that's what you saw me doing there. Linda Richards. Has anyone who has been declared ever been able to claw their way back into the cult? Yeah, there's a series of steps you can do called A to E, A, B, C, D, E. They are grueling, long, horrible steps that you have to go through to appease Scientology that you are now a good person. And you have to pay them a lot of money and do a lot of work for them and basically kowtow to anything they tell you to do, which is going to involve a lot of money. So you go through those steps, and I did see people go through those steps and get back in good graces with the church. Okay, everyone, that is our show for this week. Thank you very much for coming around. You can leave any questions, comments, or feedback in the comments below, and let me just leave you with this holiday message. Today, the day that this show is going online, is Christmas Day, and whether you celebrate Christmas or not, I wanted to wish all of you the best possible holiday season. I have nothing but good wishes for all of you, and you know, for your support of my show and all that. Thank you very much, but you know, right back at you. I support you guys too, and I hope that this holiday season and this new year are better than this last year in many respects. You know, there was a lot of good things that happened in 2016, but there were some kind of crummy things too, and I'm hoping that this next year will be a lot better for all of us. So anyway, I wanted to say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, you know, Happy Hanukkah, whatever your religious background or cultural background or whatever, just know that no matter what words I'm using, I mean you. Well wishes and a good new year coming up. So, thanks a lot.